Hello and welcome. Unless you've been living under a rock, you know that the big concern on everybody's mind nowadays is COVID-19. 53 people have been killed in the horrific Delhi riots. Yes Bank, a private sector entity, is to be bailed out by a public sector undertaking with no accountability for those who have brought the bank to this position. But all the public seems to care about is the coronavirus. Prime Minister Modi's travel to Brussels later this month for meetings with EU leaders have been cancelled. Airlines have been hit hard. Even as India's economy struggles with reviving the decelerating growth rate, the coronavirus outbreak has disrupted global supply chains and sapped business and investor confidence around the world, leading markets to tank globally. The total number of COVID-19 cases in India now stands at 31. But the total coronavirus cases has crossed 95,000 globally, with over 3,200 deaths. But the virus that causes COVID-19 is not nearly as deadly as is currently feared. But COVID-19 panic has set in nonetheless. You can't find hand sanitizers in most stores. N95 face masks are being sold online at jacked up prices. Never mind that neither is the best way to protect against the virus. It's still the same old simple, just wash your hands with water and soap. So the question we're asking tonight, is India prepared for this outbreak and its repercussions, or is the most dangerous thing about coronavirus the hysteria? That's why we're focusing on COVID-19 tonight on We the People. We hope to try and understand the character of the disease or this virus, its health risks, and separate the practical advisories on travel and sanitation from the myths and raise awareness, not raise alarm. And on the show to help us are doctors, senior doctors. We have Dr. Soumya Swaminathan, the chief scientist at the WHO, the World Health Organization. We have Dr. Sandeep Budiraja, group medical director of Max Healthcare. We have Dr. Arjun Dang, CEO of Dr. Dang's lab. We also have K. Sujata Rao, the former Union Secretary of Health, Government of India, joining us also on the show. And we have representatives of regular people who are those who have been affected. They don't have COVID-19, but they have been affected nonetheless. So we'll talk about all of that. But I want to go across first to Dr. Soumya Swaminathan, chief scientist of the WHO. Dr. Swaminathan, you know, in Geneva yesterday, the director of the WHO said that it was time to act. Well, we don't have Dr. Swaminathan right now. Let's try and get her back. She's, of course, joining us from Geneva, so apologies, but that explains why we're having some trouble getting her. Let's try and get Dr. Swaminathan up. Dr. Sandeep Budiraja, first then to you. How serious really is this? Put this into perspective for us.
So I think perspective is very important. So coronavirus is not a new virus for humankind. We've known this virus at least medically since mid-1950s, and it must have been there for centuries prior to that. What has changed now is the digital age, the access to information. So the earlier epidemics and pandemics of seasonal flu rather went unnoticed. But this time, each and every case is coming to our knowledge. Talking about how serious it is, I don't think the mortality so far which is reported, if you see the mortality reported or the fatality reported from China, is about 3 to 4%. But that's because the denominator is not right. Hmm. Each and every case has not been reported. Whereas now out of the world, if we see, the mortality rate comes to less than 2%. Probably it is closer to 1%, because here now, outside of China, each and every case probably will be reported, at least the mortality will be reported. Mm. So if we compare a 1 or 2% mortality vis-a-vis what's the previous epidemics or the pandemics, that's not too high. But what is worrying in this epidemic is the speed with which it is spreading.
Yeah. So you're saying compared to SARS, for example, the mortality rate of SARS is higher, mortality rate at COVID so far at least.
Right. SARS mortality rate was around 10%. MERS, the mortality rate was almost 35%. And here we are talking about 2% or 3% or maybe even less.
But what's dangerous is that it can spread very fast.
Yeah.
That is of concern to a country like India.
Absolutely.
I don't want to downplay this. Yeah. We want to get both sides. Yeah. I'm so glad what we have here is a doctor saying, let's remember the number of deaths from COVID-19 is much less than the number of deaths from SARS or MERS or any of these other infectious spreads that we've seen in the past.
Yeah.
But I don't want to downplay this. If it's so dangerous that it can spread, so because it spreads so fast, are we more at risk in India? Because we're saying in Italy, how many deaths have there been so far? Over 100?
Yeah.
But look at the population of Italy, look at the population in India.
So I would like to answer it in a way. In spite of what China could do by quarantining almost 5 crore population in a city, in spite of that, the virus spread in China and then out of the world.
Yeah.
So what about countries like India? A lot of unprepared European countries for that and the Middle East. If that situation was to happen, it happened in China, I think the numbers would be tremendously high. Which is true about flu. But if we are prepared, and the best part is to contain this, the most important thing is simple hygiene and simple measures, the common sense, which actually should prevail.
So let's spread common sense. Let's not spread the myths and coronavirus. Okay, we do have Dr. Soumya Swaminathan joining us again from Geneva. Dr. Swaminathan, you know, yesterday the director of the WHO said that the time to act is now, that this is not a drill. He said that there is a long list of countries who are not doing enough to combat the virus. Is India on that list?
I can't hear you very.
Dr. Swaminathan, I'm going to try again. Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can hear you now.
Perfect. I know I don't need to scream. This is like in the 90s pre-lib when you talk on the phone, you talk louder to your parents in Kerala thinking they'll hear you. Dr. Swaminathan, simply my question was, yesterday we had the WHO director hold a press conference where he said that there's a long list of countries who are not doing enough to combat the COVID-19 virus. Is India on that list?
No, we don't have a specific list of countries that that we're saying are doing or not doing enough. I think it was a general call out to countries to say that every country should be prepared. Doesn't matter whether they have already seen cases of COVID or not. It's a matter of being prepared and also being prepared for a worsening outbreak, even though we see that cases in China have come down. It's been due to extremely aggressive measures that they put in place. But the infection has seeded in many, many countries, and it could take different courses. We've seen in Korea, in Italy, in Iran, the sudden explosion of cases really overwhelming the health system. And this is why WHO is saying that one needs to take all steps to prepare on both fronts. One is containment, so continue to be very aggressive about containment, detection, isolation, quarantine, social distancing measures where appropriate, but also be thinking about the scenario where you may actually end up with hundreds or thousands of cases that need to be managed.
And what is India's experience with previous outbreaks? How could that either help, could that help us tackle this better? Because we've had a mixed record, honestly, when it comes to outbreaks like SARS, swine flu, the Nipah virus.
You know, I think we've had great successes in public health. You know, the number of diseases that India has eliminated, starting from polio, which was the biggest success story, and no one thought it would be possible. And then, of course, there was Nipah, but that happened in Kerala, which had, a good health system. We have faced influenza outbreaks, we've responded to them. I think over the last few years, India has developed a fairly strong public health surveillance and response system. We have now an integrated health information platform where data is coming in on, a real-time basis. There are district teams which can go and investigate outbreaks. There are many more trained epidemiologists available in the state public health departments. So to a large extent, I think we have strengthened our capacity. But that's not to say that, it will not be challenging. I think that we know that there are many parts of India, many states that do not have as strong health systems as one would hope for. And there are many, many challenges to be overcome, both geographic, distances. There are populations that are extremely vulnerable. There are areas where there are less health facilities. So it is going to be a challenge if it turns out that this infection, becomes a widespread community infection, which at the moment it is not. And if India can limit it, correct, then that would be the best possible outcome.
But Dr. Swaminathan, there have been so many repercussions of COVID-19 and the spread and the scare around it. So I ask you, can you put this into perspective for us? Because if one were to really, or if one should be worrying about any infectious disease, should it not be, for example, TB? Because according to the WHO, that the epicenter of TB also is India, with 27% of the cases globally. Yet we don't see the kind of reaction, the kind of panic that we're seeing to COVID-19 for something like TB.
Yes, and the reason is that it's a new infection. It's new to the world, it's new to scientists, it's new to people. And so there's understandable anxiety, because even scientists don't have all the answers. We're not able to give all the answers that the public have. And therefore, that creates this feeling of uncertainty and anxiety. Now, you rightly said that if you put it in perspective, at the moment, this disease, you know, has affected 100,000 people worldwide and killed 3,000, whereas TB every year affects 10 million people and kills 1.5 million, half a million of whom are in India. But this, you know, TB has been with us forever, and so it tends to go under the radar. Diseases which have been around for a long time tend to be under the radar. Any new infection always causes a great deal of global attention. Hmm. But coming back to COVID-19 and what we know about it, the death rate appears to be between 2-3%. Again, we're not 100% sure, because we really don't know the denominators, how many people actually are infected, of which we know how many have died, how many have gone undetected. There are still some questions to be answered. The mortality rate is less than the previous two coronavirus outbreaks we've seen, SARS and MERS, but it's more than seasonal influenza. So it's a kind of a bad kind of a flu virus, you could say, you know, a bad year of flu, which would kill 1-2% of people. That's the kind of virus we're seeing. So yes, I think we have to put it in perspective. There's been so much media attention, so much social media attention, and there's been a lot of false information circulating as well, you know, all kinds of conspiracy theories. Mm. And that adds to the panic. So I think we need to really calm people down and put things in perspective, as you
Correct.
Said.
It's perhaps only human nature to be scared of what we don't understand. So that's why we're trying to do this show again on COVID-19 today, to try and get to the bottom of it. Thank you, Dr. Swaminathan, for joining us and for your time this evening. Well, Dr. Dang, talking about panic spreading, I'm sure you are at the center of it all. You probably see that. What's it like for you at Dr. Dang's lab, where people come in to be tested? And right now, testing is important because we don't have a vaccine. So first, tell us about what you're seeing around you at your lab every day.
Sure. Thanks for the question. So for the past almost couple of weeks, we've been getting hundreds of inquiries every day. And people are completely in a state of panic, and all they ask us is that, oh, we have a fever and we have a cough and my child is unwell, and what do we do next? So currently there is a state of panic, and also, so I always believe that correct information is useful, but incorrect information can be disastrous.
But I want to first check for everyone, private labs like yours can't do a test for COVID-19.
Yes, currently that's correct.
It's only the government that can.
That's
so, for example, what would someone do? Someone, let's say I call you, I'm in absolute panic, I'm coughing, I'm sneezing, or my child is coughing or sneezing. I think I have coronavirus because everybody is talking about
yes.
it. What am I supposed to do next if I can't come to you
yes.
and get tested?
So if you tell me that you have the symptoms, my staff or me, whoever you speak to, we are going to ask you two questions.
Hmm.
The first one is going to be, do you have any travel history in the past 2 weeks, or do you have a preceding travel history that needs to be noted? If yes, then we'll ask you, from where have you traveled?
Hmm.
And the second one, again, is related to contact tracing.
Hmm.
Could you have been in contact with someone who's already an infected case in India? So if the answer to either of these two is positive, then we will suggest you to go to a government institute where testing is being performed.
Hmm.
And the process currently is that, actually, I applaud the government. There's a very good helpline that people can call. I've personally tried it, and it's picked up in 4 to 6 rings. And there is someone behind the line who takes down your information, gives you very accurate, precise information about what is to be done next. So they tell you that go to a government institute, meet a doctor there or a physician there, get a prescription, and if they think appropriate, you could proceed for testing. Hmm.
So I want to again clarify this for any of our viewers who are watching.
Yes.
Because the symptoms, you said, what are the symptoms? The symptoms are of the common flu.
Yes, but primarily it's a fever with a dry cough that it starts.
Fever
with.
And a dry cough. So you're saying only if you've traveled abroad.
Yes.
Or if you've been in touch with somebody who has traveled abroad to an infected country, okay. Only then is it likely that you, I mean, only then should you even go in for a test.
For
otherwise,
the COVID-19.
You should assume that it is the common flu.
Yes, you should assume that it's the common flu at the same time.
But this is the season for the common flu, right?
Exactly.
So where does one draw the line between panic and reality?
So you even
foreign
have certain
travel.
Precautions if you have the common flu. That is masks now. It is a big rumor that everyone says that everyone is supposed to wear masks. But actually masks are only recommended for people with any kind of symptoms.
Hmm.
Even if it's a flu and you have a cough or you're sneezing, you wear a mask. And otherwise you don't need a mask to protect yourself.
Okay, so that's a very important point. I want to come across to that because everybody seems to be rushing out to buy these masks. But Dr. Buthi Raja, that said, there's a 14-day incubation period, right? So again, are we downplaying this? If Dr. Dang is saying, look, if you haven't traveled abroad, if you haven't been in touch, so maybe you don't have it, but there's a 14-day incubation period.
Yeah, so you're right. So recommendations will change over a period of time and have been changing in countries depending upon the number of cases being reported. So as Dr. Dang said, initially for a country when it gets reported the first few cases or the new illness which gets reported in a country, the criteria would be restricted. And the criteria would be, as he said, that you have had a recent travel or you have a clear contact with somebody who's been diagnosed.
Hmm.
But as the disease spread evolves and there are indigenous cases coming up, so there is no history of contact with a confirmed case and there is no history of travel, and yet you might want to suspect and rule out COVID.
Hmm.
Now, some countries are in that phase. We know Italy, South Korea, Iran, etc. There, if you even don't have a history of travel or contact, you would do a COVID test if suspected. Now, the question is, what and when do you suspect? So again, it has been said repeatedly that most of these cases behave like a common flu. So even if you do not investigate every case, there's no problem. But you need to understand which case to do a test definitely. The ones who are at a high risk. And who are the ones at high risk? Elderlies. Above 80, the mortality rate is highest. And people who have some underlying comorbid medical conditions, so diabetes, hypertension, heart disease, cancers, or you are on some steroids or medicines which suppress your immunity.
So those who have died may not have died due to coronavirus per se, but it's because it has exacerbated some other illness that
right.
they already have.
Which
was making their
immune system
weak. So
many of these infections
weak.
Do cause multi-organ failure ultimately or secondary bacterial infections. But these are generally seen more in people whose immunity is low. Because normally in viral
Correct.
Illnesses, it's your body immunity which actually kills the virus. So if you have a defective immunity, the infection will not come under control and one by one your organs start failing, which maybe already the organs are just on the borderline or the brink of functioning because of the underlying medical condition. So in this group of patients, irrespective of whether history of travel is there or not, I would and one would recommend a COVID testing to be done.
Okay, so two many important things you've raised. But first and foremost, what you're saying is that it's the elderly who are most at risk.
Yeah.
And maybe infants whose immune system isn't yet.
No, so that's very interesting. They have not seen a single mortality from zero to 10
years. We'll come to children later because of the schools. But if you're saying elderly, I'm just trying to understand. Are we all focusing our energies? Is the government focusing all its energies on the wrong sectors then? Because we're saying cut down on airline travel. We're saying, you know, cancel schools. But we're not saying look at old age homes.
So I'll reframe what I said. It's not that young population is immune or resistant to the infection. They will get infection. But the chances of disease getting serious and they dying of disease is less if you are young and more if you are old and have medical conditions.
Okay, let's get some questions in from the audience. If anyone has a question for... here, you go ahead.
So I think something that's more dangerous than the virus itself is the fake news surrounding it. And I have had lots of WhatsApp forwards that if you do this, you won't get the virus. Supposedly, some of them would say that if you keep cardamom in a pouch along with you, you won't get a virus. And my dad forwarded it to me that you should keep it with you. So what is actually going to help in this? We don't know. Can you please show some?
Okay, that's interesting. Before you go respond to that, I think that is something that we must touch upon. There's so many myths that have been doing the rounds. In fact, the Ayush Ministry has issued a health advisory for the prevention of coronavirus infections through homeopathy in Ayurveda. So does that help at all? It's got some recommendations. You know, you take these medicines, you put 2 drops of sesame oil in your nostrils every day. Perhaps that will help. In that context, we spoke with Mr. Ramdev. Many of you know him as a Baba Ramdev. That's how he likes to be addressed. He's a yoga guru. He is also the founder of the FMCG giant Patanjali. And so in that context, we spoke with him on coronavirus. Mr. Ramdev, you know, log bahut dar rahe hai coronavirus se. What are the precautions you think people should be taking?
Total pranayam se humari immunity strong hoti hai. Jiski immunity strong hogi, wo isse lad sakega. Ultimately, koi bhi virus humare sharir mein jata hai, to हमारा जो इम्यून सिस्टम वो वही उस वायरस को लड़ करके उसको किल करता है. तो ब्रीदिंग एक्सरसाइज करके हम अपनी इम्यूनिटी को बढ़ा करके, अपने रेस्पिरेटरी सिस्टम को स्ट्रांग करके, अपने इंटरनल ऑर्गन्स को स्ट्रांग करके हम इससे लड़ सकते हैं और इससे जीत सकते हैं.
All right, so that's also what Dr. Budhi Raja was saying. You have to improve your immunity system. But Mr. Ramdev, ये जो वायरस जो डॉक्टर बुद्धि राजा कह रहे थे कि प्रॉब्लम ये है कि स्प्रेड करती है बहुत जल्दी से और कंफ्यूजन बहुत है. आप बता सकते हो आपको क्या लगता है, व्हाई डज इट स्प्रेड? डू यू नो अबाउट दैट?
देखिए, ये कोरोना जो वायरस है ऐसे हवा से तो उड़ के आता नहीं. तो एक तो ये भी गलत फहमी लोग पालना बंद कर दे कि लोग, करोड़ों लोग गांव के भी पैनिक हो गए कि हमको तो कहीं कोरोना नहीं हो जाएगा. तो ये कहीं हवा में से उड़ करके आकर के होने वाली कोई बीमारी नहीं है. जिस जो इन्फेक्टेड व्यक्ति है उनसे लगभग 3 फीट की दूरी तक इसके वायरस का असर होता है, जब वो छींकते हैं या खांसते हैं, कुछ भी करते हैं, या उनके सांस के माध्यम से भी, और वो हमारे मुख से, नाक से और आंख से वो हमारे बॉडी में एंटर कर सकता है वायरस. तो ऐसे लोग, तो इससे एक बात तो ये मैं कहना चाहता हूँ कि किसी तरह से कोई आतंकित तो होने की कोई बात नहीं है, लेकिन इसका जो वायरस है वो पशुओं से आया है. इसलिए यदि अभी मैं तो कभी खाता नहीं, लेकिन जो खाते भी है मांसाहार, यदि थोड़े दिन वो शाकाहारी हो जाए तो अच्छी बात है. तो उससे अपने आप को ज्यादा प्रोटेक्ट कर पाएंगे. जितने भी फ्रूट्स हैं, वेजिटेबल्स हैं, स्प्राउट्स हैं, इन चीजों का प्रयोग करते हैं तो ये आपकी मदद करेंगे आपकी इम्यूनिटी को बढ़ाने में, आपको कोरोना से बचाने में.
ओके, लास्ट क्वेश्चन बिफोर आई पिक अप ऑन दैट, मिस्टर रामदेव, अगर किसी को कोरोना वायरस है तो उनको कैसे, क्या करना चाहिए? हाउ कैन दे फाइट इट?
तो आप इसके होने के बाद भी आप इसके ऊपर विजय प्राप्त कर सकते हो, इससे होने से अपने आप को बचा सकते हो, और अपने घर में हाइजीन का ध्यान रखें. बाकी जो लोग, बाकी प्रिकॉशंस जो बार बार बताए जा रहे हैं उनका भी ध्यान रखें. और हम जैसे लोग हैं, हम तो थोड़े ट्रेडिशनल भी है, तो हम तो हवन करने में भी विश्वास रखते हैं कि गाय का घी, गुग्गल, कुछ ऐसी औषधियां जो आप मेरे पीछे देख रहे हो, तो हम रोज हवन भी करते हैं. तो जो लोग, जहां ज्यादा संभावना है तो वहां लोग हवन भी कर सकते हैं, गाय का घी का दिया जला सकते हैं, इस तरह की चीजें भी जो करना चाहें परंपरागत रूप से कर सकते हैं.
ओके, थैंक यू सो मच मिस्टर रामदेव. सो यू नो बेसिकली ही इज सेइंग द सेम that you are, you need to improve your immunity system. Of course, yes, there's one, he claims that being a vegetarian is better. Doctor, your scientific opinion on that?
So scientifically, that's really not corroborated, although there have been some advisories regarding avoidance of frozen meat. But if it is a well-cooked meat or products or egg for that reason, we would consider that as safe.
Again, you know, this is important because there are so many industries economically who have been affected by this coronavirus spread already. More myths about this could affect other industries also, the food, beverage industry, all of them already affected. You know, havans, supposedly in Prayagraj, there was a havan to combat the coronavirus. There are all these myths, somebody saying boycott Chinese goods, as usual, that always comes up. Why, you know, if it weren't so scary, I mean, if it would be funny if it weren't so scary because it could involve lives. What do you say, this young man had this question about myths that are spreading. What would you say in response to them?
Okay, I think, so I'll try to answer both the questions together. So this virus is spread as a droplet when a person coughs or sneezes. And it's been seen that you might see some say 1 meter, some say 2 meters, so 3 feet or 6 feet is the distance till which these droplets can travel. And the good part is these droplets are big droplets, so they will fall on the ground. They won't keep sort of hanging in the air or keep floating in the air. And the moment they go down and touch on the surface, depending upon what surface is it, they may survive for 6 hours, 8 hours, 12 hours, or maybe even longer. So if it's on the tabletop, it can survive up to 12 to 14 hours. If it's something like your hands or clothes, it survives for 6 hours or maybe less. Now, that's the most important route of spreading this infection to others. So obviously, if a person coughs or sneezes and I'm within that 1 or 2 meters, the droplets will directly come on my face and I'll also get exposed. Hence, the role of face mask. And face mask is actually more crucial and critical to be worn by a person who has symptoms of cough and cold rather than by all of us sitting in a mass gathering. So people who have symptoms of cough and cold must wear masks so that they don't produce and or bring that droplet to the air. Second thing, as I said, the droplets settle down on surfaces. So cleaning of surfaces and cleaning of your hands, that way becomes most important thing. So you will not spread
more
that.
Important than havans and more important
so
than
havan may
there's
have
a BJP
so havan,
leader in Assam yeah. who says that
so,
cow's urine
no, havan
or
may have
like
a role
can,
by it may do the same thing as fogging would do, so it may kill the virus because of the temperature.
Okay.
But I would rather bring this point of hand wash here. So 2-3 things. One is when you cough, either have a disposable tissue and throw that disposable tissue in a proper bin. Most people will not carry that. So the cough etiquette, which is actually given by WHO years back, most of the people you will see cough and sneeze.
Hold on. Does anybody know what the cough etiquette is?
That's correct. Absolutely.
Right? Sneeze into
so
your elbow.
Never cough or sneeze into your hands. It should be a sort of bent elbow so that, when you shaking hands is to be done away with. So Indian tradition of namaste, again, we were talking about that because you don't
Well,
spread
I'll
infection.
Have you know, Dr. Dang greeted me. I went to shake his hand. He said, Corona Absolutely. Namaste. So I've been taught, schooled well today.
So these are common sense things, as I said in the beginning, common sense. So what you should do and what you should not do. Myths, I would not really like to comment. So there is no treatment as we know today. So all those claims of things of arsenicum in homeopathy, etc., and Ayurveda, I would not be able to comment on that. There are no clear studies. But anything which is innocuous or benign and doesn't give side effects and increases our immunity, for that reason, vitamin C also one can use.
Okay, there are more questions that I want to raise, but I also want to talk about why this is so important that we focus on the truth, on the facts, on the reality, and not on the myths, because that spreads coronavirus and it is affecting lives, it is affecting businesses. We have Rajiv Jain joining us here from Rashi Entertainment. This is one of India's biggest event management companies. How has business been affected because of the spread of coronavirus?
Sarah, in last 8 days' time, I think practically everything is getting shaken up badly. What I was reading, certain reports that there is a downfall of approximately $1.3 billion of economy that is bound to happen. The industry which we belong to, which is into celebrations and experiences and weddings, is deeply affected in these last 7 days' time. Practically every event which we are a part of it or our friends from EMA are part of it are getting cancelled. The case in example is from yesterday till today, IFA is cancelled. IFA is postponed, Ultra is cancelled, FDCI is postponed. I was just driving towards this side, I heard that internationally Tomorrowland is being postponed or cancelled, whatever you want to call it. Other than that, a lot of weddings, a lot of experiences, a lot of holy parties, everything is getting cancelled for the hype that is being made around. As I think you were very clearly saying that this is when we, Dr. Dang was saying this very clearly, that when we cough or sneeze, this is very simple fever that we are talking about. We have to be very careful. As an industry, we have to be with the government of India and whatever they are saying, and we have to follow this. And based on that, all the leadership countries of this country have cancelled or postponed their events. But the economy is getting dampened very much. An estimated today's morning was approximately $100 billion, which is around 7,000 crore rupees has been lost in 5 days' time in the cancellations. Airlines, hotels, any hotel, if you go, the room that was selling for 12,000 rupees is available in 5,000 rupees. I was reading very important report today that a ticket from Delhi to New York and Delhi was for 2,70,000 for a business class is being sold out in 1,30,000 rupees, which is no price to be done. Every industry which is affected with the celebration and experience is getting affected. Yes, we were lucky that the wedding industry have done all their weddings up till February, and after February, I'm hearing that March, April, May, the weddings which were happening in Antalya, which were happening in UAE, which were happening in Dubai, are all
destination
weddings are
which
all getting cancelled.
Which would have canceled. Been in Southeast Asia, all of them affected.
All are getting cancelled or postponed or getting shifted, or the celebrations are becoming smaller. Like this case of IFA, Viscraft does this particular property. We've been a part and parcel of it in some little way. But yes, every hotel was practically booked.
But Mr. Jain, I understand. These are serious issues. Many lives are affected. You employ many people. Everybody's, and the economy is already on a downturn. But when you say it's a hype, because these are lives. There are lives that have been lost, 3,000 lives that have been lost. And India, in the past, given our population, so how do we strike a balance?
Let me tell you, we are a very responsible industry. Any news that has come out, we are the first one to say this particular thing, that please cancel all the big gatherings, please cancel all the big events. But it is an overhyped thing. You only told in your report just now that 30,000 people die of TB, right? And 20,000 people do suicide every year. We have to fight. We are into celebrations. The doctors are doing their job. We have to be happy. There is a huge panic just now. The panic can only be controlled by these all WhatsApp forwards in groups, in social medias, in Facebooks, in Twitters. We don't understand, sir, and we forward it. And the kind of news you read is like mind-boggling. It disturbs your business economy. It disturbs everything, that cancel, 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 cancel. Where will the Indian economy go? Where will we get GSTs from? Where will we get taxes from? Everything is getting in a very disturbed stage. And if, like I was talking to you, sir, and you said that this will continue for 2 to 3 months' time. In my opinion, if it continues for 30 more days, please expect a huge downfall in the entire economy of the world. But
which we can't afford right now, because GDP new data just out, 4.7 anyway. But Dr. Budhiraja, then we're also told that this is not going to last for more than 2-3 weeks. Is that correct? Because supposedly when summer kicks in, because of the heat, the viruses will die off.
So that presumption is based on how the other flu infections or seasonal flus behave. So you have in India, in North India, two peaks. One is post-monsoon, and second is in January, February. Every year we see a lot of flu patients. We are seeing that now also. And they normally subside when the summer set in, because a flu virus does not survive beyond 30 degrees temperature and in humid. So it needs a cold and dry weather. Now, if this particular virus also behaves the same way, yes, we will see a decline. But the problem is, as was said by Dr. Somia, we don't know the nature of this virus. So it is uncertain. But yes, if it behaves like normal flu viruses, it will die off.
Okay, so it's not really good news, because for them also a lot of weddings, etc., all of it takes place, because it's the only time we have good weather in Delhi. We can't do it in the middle of the summer anyway. But let me just bring in Squadron Leader Prerna Chaturvedi is joining us, right? She, you are a Gurgaon-based electric vehicle startup. It's a product also of veteran defense officers who wanted to build a mobility system to avoid reaching to fuel stations for far-flung, secluded cantonments. So you do electronic batteries, etc.
Yes, that's right.
The fact that China was the largest, you know, manufacturing hub of the world, and COVID-19 emerged, started in Wuhan in China, how has that affected your business?
Acutely, I would say, he was just mentioning, the events get rescheduled. They may get just postponed and rescheduled. They can always be held the next time. But a business, when it comes to a little halt, or it staggers or stumbles a little, it's very difficult to get that time back in and do that event one more time 2 months later. It doesn't happen in business that way. Although we can say that some of the parts have been sourced from China. Some people can always debate that it's only either 2.7% of these parts were getting imported. Some part was only 27% of the entire inventory. Some part was just about 18% of the entire inventory. But how important was that part in building the entire product ecosystem is what has to be paid attention to. So if it was just a luggage box or it was just that plastic part which was missing, now you cannot do a product without that plastic part, or you can't do that without that lacquer finish, and it cannot go to the market. But even if there is just 2% of that one part, let's say in the field of electric mobility, everybody is getting those lithium cell pouches imported. We do not have nothing in the country. And it has come at a time wherein it is a sunrise industry.
Yeah.
The only disruption in the industry is coming from startups like Evolet. If that startup at the inception stage itself stumbles, a biggest...
And you launched only in September.
We launched only in September.
So horrifically bad timing for you.
Terrible. But at the same time, we understand that it's adding to a larger collaborative cause, that yes, the containers must be held in quarantine. And we must be absolutely responsible. Like, you know, we are a group of veterans who've started this association together. And our entire bottom line of starting this startup was, we have migrated from being responsible citizens into doing responsible business. That's been the line that we've been repeating again and again for last 6-9 months.
And this was an industry that needed a push also. Sustainability.
Sustainability, affordability, and this was
okay,
the line.
You're an entrepreneur now, you're a business person now. Is the Indian economy equipped to deal with the disturbance caused by the coronavirus epidemic? China's the biggest manufacturer, the biggest exporter.
At the moment, no. I would say no, because we are in a phase wherein we are yet to become 100% Make in India compliant. Most of the people are, and that's the support that the industry has been asking, that it has to be a G2G sort of a support for a startup, even for established industry. Startup is a different game altogether, but if you look at even the established automobile industry, you can say, let's say for Maruti's or Mahindra's or let's say even for Tata's, although their import may have been blocked only by 18% or in some cases 2.7 or 3.5%, but in February alone, they've seen a 55% drop in production. So if an established industry comes across a biggest roadblock like this, what would happen to sunrise industries and the startups, especially in the field of electric mobility, which was already seeking support from neither this from the government and from the consumer segment? Yes. What would happen to them?
Yes. Okay. Dr. Sujata Rao joining us, former Union Health Secretary. Thank you, Ms. Rao. I don't know if you heard Dr. Soumya Swaminathan of the WHO at the start of the show. She said that India has strong public health facility systems in place. I'd like to ask you, are you in agreement? How equipped is India right now to deal with the spread of the coronavirus epidemic?
Well, I think if I heard her right, what she had said was that India has a very good experience of handling public health issues like in polio, HIV, AIDS. And, you know, so we have this experience.
Because we have strong public health
So we do have the knowledge, basically, and the four principles that public health are required to be applied for COVID also have been applied in the case, say, of HIV, AIDS. Which is what? First, information and public dissemination, which means training of the media, telling them of media what the right information is to be put out. So public is a well-informed public, number one. So no panic is spread. They know the causative factors that lead to the transmission of the virus. The second is surveillance and contact tracing. That means anyone having the history for or probability of getting that infection is then taken out, and you know, his whole history for the last 14 days, movement is tracked. And it's a lot of diligence that is required in this. That means you're literally tracking where he went, who he met, where he sat, and you sanitize the place, you contact those people, keep a vigil on all those people that he has met in the last 14 days to see whether they are having any symptoms. And if one of them has, then you do contact tracing of that one person. So, you know, we have something like 30,000 people being monitored as I speak today, even though the number of cases are only 31. Now, this kind of surveillance and contact tracing is what helped us in Nipah in Kerala. Again, helped us contain the infection right now when 3 cases were shown. It's an absolutely critical methodology that has to be done. But it, as I said, it requires training, it requires diligence, and no question of reducing the guard or the vigil, as I would say.
And a huge scale. All right, Dr. Rao, hold on. You know, because when we started off, the scale keeps magnifying. Because when we started off, the epicenter was Wuhan in China, where you were seeing people being quarantined and screened. Now there are 9 epicenters, I'm told. One of them, for example, is Iran. I just want to bring in a young student, an Indian student, Quratul Ul-Ain, joining us now from, she's a student of Shiraz University of Medical Sciences in Iran, and she's one of the among 300 students, Indian students, who are now stuck in Iran because commercial flights aren't taking off from the Tehran airport, and flights to India, of course, cancelled for now. Kurat, how are you all doing? Because it's been what? How many weeks since you have not been able to come home? Schools have been closed and you're pretty much stuck there.
It's been over 3 weeks and students here are very sick. And initially, we were not taking it that seriously because we understand how the disease actually behaves and that most of the people don't experience that too severe symptoms. But given the rise in the incidence right now, as you see, the incidence is increasing here at a very fast pace, and the death toll is also rising at a very fast pace. So that sense of fear has settled in among all of us now. And apart from that, not just our own health, we're also worried about the community health, because we could become a potential source of the infection and spread it around to those that are already at higher risk of mortality because of other comorbidities.
So 124 people have now died in Iran.
Yes.
What is daily life like for you? Do you manage to go out for food? I mean, how are you sustaining yourself?
We're basically practicing self-quarantine at this point, and we don't go out that much unless it's absolutely necessary. And when we do go out to buy groceries or the daily necessities, we try to avoid, you know, consuming them right away. We keep them for a while, and so that, you know, the virus, if the virus is on the surfaces, it dies down in a while. And we're doing our best to take all the precautionary measures, but the more important aspect of it is the psychological aspect.
Yes.
The pressure from our homes as well is also adding up on that. They're all very worried about us, and they want us back home. So we.
I can imagine, because you don't know when it's going to end, when you'd be on the next flight, be able to come home. So you want to be evacuated by the Indian government, all of the Indian students.
Yes. Because that is the safest way out of here, in my opinion, because we'll be screened first, and then we can go to our respective homes. And
be in quarantine over here in India, if needed, or whatever, which would be obvious.
If needed. And we're willing to take all of that. Like, it's necessary, in my opinion. And But a lot of students were, you know, trying to find other ways out of here. Some were thinking that they were probably going to take a flight from here to Moscow, and then from there they will come to Delhi. But that, like all of us, we've been trying to, advise them against that, because that's not safe in any way. Mm. Not only are they going to be exposing themselves.
Yes, absolutely.
Apart from
thank
that,
you, Kurat, and all the best to all of you. But Dr. Rao, please come in over here. This is a catch-22 situation for the government. It's not an easy position for the government to be in. But as this young lady is pointing out, they're desperate. They want to get out. Some students are coming up with, you know, crazy plans. They're saying they'd fly to Moscow and come back in. There's an inherent, even greater danger of that if people aren't upfront about where they've been, where they're coming from. A difficult situation for this government to be in right now.
Well, I think they should be evacuated if those people in those countries want to come back to their home. I think we should send in our flights and get them here. And there are ways in which you can isolate them and quarantine them if they are infected.
We've done it with Wuhan and China, so why
yes.
not Iran?
So, yeah. So, you know, if they're found to be sick in Iran, you don't get them here. But, you know, you can always get them to India and keep them here. But I want to finish the earlier question you asked me. Just one, give me a minute. And that is, when you said, is the health system ready? The third component of a strategy is to have good laboratories and to have a health system with doctors and nurses. The treatment is equally important if you don't want to reduce mortality. And this is where the connection between our ability to contain a disease like this and the condition of the health systems, which, you know, are particularly constrained in the northern states, does really come up. So do we have enough doctors? Do we have laboratories? Do we have the immediate diagnosis and testing so that we can take preventive measures? This issue really crops up in the context of northern states, where they do have a lot of adverse situations that they have to deal with very inadequate health system response. So, for example, there's one test which is positive, it has to be confirmed by the NIV in Pune. Now, you know, we need to have about 5 NIV Punas in this country for the size that we are in. So it's time that budgets increase, we invest on public health infrastructure, and this develops, maybe we will have to get in the private sector also. We did that in 2010 when we had the H1N1. We had the private sector also collaborating with us and expand the testing sites. So the trick is here to get the guy early on, diagnose and treat him. That's very, very critical. Otherwise, it slips into society and continues to transmit the infection.
Dr. Dang, you have private institutes like yours are able to carry out these tests right now.
Yes, so we do have the infrastructure and the capacity and more importantly, the trained manpower as well.
But are there talks, has anyone in the government approached you? Is there a likelihood that private institutes will now be allowed to do these tests?
So to increase
if there's so much demand?
Yes, so to increase accessibility and bandwidth also, private labs entering the testing arena is a good idea. And primarily the safety norms, if they are followed, it would be definitely a good idea to have private labs in it. Because I get patients on an everyday basis and going to a government institute, although the number has really been ramped up by the government and that's very good, but everyone is not really ready to walk into a government institute and sit in an OPD full of unwell people, meet the doctor, get a prescription, then get the first screening test and then get a confirmatory test from NIV Pune. So definitely collaborating with the private players, keeping in mind the capabilities and the infrastructure capacity that they have will be a good idea.
Okay, now I hate to put this so crassly, so crudely, but you know, Mr. Jain, as we're saying, every situation throws up opportunities for some and it's a setback and a disadvantage for others. We've already talked about how many businesses are being affected. We have a chemist here. Aap chemist ho?
Yeah.
Toh, sir, there must be mad panic in your store.
हाँ ऐसा है कि काफ़ी टाइम से ये चीज़ें बढ़ गई है
हाँ.
और दिन ब दिन कि इतना स्टॉक हमारे पास होता नहीं है ठीक है और
मास्क
एंड सैनिटाइजर दोनों
हाँ,
की बहुत
ऑफ yeah.
दोनों इतने कस्टमर वापस जा रहे हैं लगभग कम से कम मेरे पास 50 अराउंड डे कस्टमर वापस जा रहे हैं और ये प्रोडक्ट अवेलेबल भी नहीं है ना ये डिस्ट्रीब्यूटर ना ये मार्केट में बिल्कुल अवेलेबल नहीं है
जैसे बट डॉक्टर यहाँ पे डॉक्टर कह रहे हैं कि सबको मास्क पहनने की जरूरत है नहीं
हाँ, ये
अगर आपको कोई सिम्टम्स हो तो आपको यस ऑफ कोर्स पहनना चाहिए बट इफ एवरीबडी स्टार्ट्स वेयरिंग अ मास्क दोज हु एक्चुअली नीड इट द पीपल इन द फर्स्ट लाइन ऑफ डिफेंस द नर्सेज एवरीबडी इन आवर हॉस्पिटल्स प्रोवाइडिंग केयर देयर इज गोइंग टू बी दिस आर्टिफिशियल शॉर्टेज
लोगों को ये नॉलेज नहीं है वो सब मास्क पहने जा रहे हैं और ये एक व्हाट्सएप से आता है कि मास्क पहनो वो सब सबको एक नहीं है दस दस मार्क्स खरीदने हैं किसी को 20 खरीदने हैं ऐसे बेफालतू के लिए एक पैशन बनाओ कि मार्क्स खरीदे जाओ
और एंड देन दीस मार्क्स आर देन जस्ट गोइंग टू बी थ्रोन इन द डस्टबिन एंड नेक्स्ट वीक वी विल बी डूइंग अ शो ऑन गार्बेज डिस्पोजल एंड प्लास्टिक डिस्पोजल हाउ डू वी गेट रिड ऑफ ऑल ऑफ दैट बट सो दिस इज अगेन अ प्रॉब्लम बिकॉज यू आर सेइंग बेसिकली पीपल शुड जस्ट स्टिक टू एट लीस्ट वॉशिंग योर हैंड्स मोर रेगुलरली विद सोप बेटर देन अ हैंड सैनिटाइजर
सोप एंड वाटर डू इट फॉर 20 सेकंड्स or alcohol-based rubs where the alcohol content is more than 60 or 70, around 70%,
huh.
Both are equally effective. So it's not that it's only the alcohol-based rubs which you have to buy from chemist. Your routine hand washing with soap and water for good 20 seconds with a proper technique is good enough.
But my question is, these sanitizers emerged, you know, when people are traveling, when you're on the road, if you're not on flight, you can't go and access soap and water.
Yeah.
Is it now a replacement for soap and water?
Yes.
Is that better? Should I be using a hand sanitizer or should I just be using soap?
So they are replacement of soap and water when the soap and water is not accessible. So when you are traveling, you are in mall, you are in lifts, you are in public transport, you hold on to things in public transport, you should wash your hands. And at that time, the only thing which comes handy is the hand sanitizer.
Okay. All right. Thank you. I think we've learned a lot. We hope. We just... Quick word.
So I have another point about masks. Because especially aap jaise chemist mein hai, you should tell anyone who comes to you to buy a mask that what is the actual way of correct way of wearing a mask. So many people are wearing masks the wrong way. So it's a really simple method and I'll take 30 seconds to explain it. So when you get a mask, before touching it, this is the normal surgical medical mask, the blue and white one that we are talking about. So before touching it, your hands have to be absolutely clean. So you wash or you sanitize. You pick up the masks by the side threads and put them behind your ears. That is the best way. The mask should fit in a way that there's minimum gap between the nose, mouth and the mask itself. And secondly, when you take off the mask as well, you don't have to keep touching the front of the mask.
Mm.
What I actually feel in a lot of advisories also says, now non-symptomatic people wearing masks, how it actually helps them is that prevents them from touching their mouth all the time. because without knowing a person actually touches their face and mouth 30 to 40 times a day.
Mm.
So it actually helps with that. And this knowledge is missing. And when you dispose a mask, because you mentioned it, it should go into a dustbin that has a lid on top
Correct.
Of it. If the mask gets wet or damp, it needs to be discarded.
So many things one has to keep in mind in simple steps.
Masks.
Yes, that's very important. So okay. N95
well,
is...
thank you. We are completely out of time. But we hope we've touched upon the various aspects so that, you know, if our government is listening, watching, what they need to keep in mind as they figure out the next steps forward. Goodbye. This is We the People. We believe this is where we should speak up, but it's also important to listen. We hope we did that tonight. Goodbye. Don't overreact. Don't misinform. Don't judge without bias. Share information that's useful but not sensationalist or potentially incorrect. Let's stay safe. Let's stay healthy. And most of all, let's stay human. Don't overreact. Thank you. Bye-bye.